Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Now, let's go to the wider world. As you'll be aware, as we speak, COP30 is happening in the city of Belém in Brazil, very pointedly in the Amazon region. The Taoiseach and was speaking there this week. World leaders were there over the last few days, not as many as before. But over 30,000 delegates are attending, 3,000 journalists covering the event. But is anyone listening? Dr. David Robbins, good morning.
Morning, Brendan.
Dave, you're a professor of journalism at DCU. You're also co-director of the Institute for Climate and Society there. So does the climate change movement have a marketing problem?
Well, that's an interesting way of putting it. Marketing is usually about trying to get people to buy more stuff. And a lot of people in the climate movement are trying to get people to buy less stuff. So it has a communications problem, an engagement problem, and all sorts of different problems. But I'm not sure I'd call it a market.
Okay, okay. A communication problem, maybe.
Yeah.
And why do you think, what's wrong with the way the issue has been communicated?
Oh, God. Well, it's hard to know where to start with that one. I suppose the first challenges, we've been using mass messages through mass media to talk about this rather than segmenting and trying to craft messages that resonate with different smaller audiences. The second one is that we've tended to lead with scientific data about climate impacts and so on. And that
Does that not connect with people's scientific information? Because, you know, it is always like follow the science, believe the science. The scientists are saying this.
Yeah. It's very important that the policy is kind of science based. But when you have a scientist front and center talking about it and using data to explain it, you've lost a lot of people. Some people really buy that. Some people will eat that up. But for a lot of people, it's quite distancing. And it means, look, we leave that to the scientists. You know?
It's an abstract scientific problem, in other words. OK, are scientists the right people as well to be? I know some scientists are increasingly are fantastic communicators now and can really bring things alive and get people emotionally and in the gut. But are scientists the best people to be communicating this, given the type they are?
As you say, there are some that are really good at it, but all their training is a bit to get them to stay a little above the fray to their own kind of professional norms would mean they'd feel peers might look down on them if they engaged in too much kind of public communication. And the way they communicate, they're very reluctant to say things declaratively. It's always about probabilities. And that doesn't kind of land that well with journalists or with the audience.
Okay. And look, it is a very negative story, obviously, but can the communication of it tend to be relentlessly negative as well? And is that a problem? Because do people just switch off, like, if something seems so terrible?
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's been a bad news story for 40, 50 years. And we've been talking about climate impacts of, you know, sea level rise and drought and wildfires and so on. And that what that does to people, they kind of give up. They kind of think this is a done deal. This is happening and there's nothing I can do about it. And it misses out the bit that, you know, the difference between 2.5 degrees of warming and 4 degrees of warming is big. So if you just switch off and throw your hands up, you're increasing the likelihood of that greater level of warming.
So you would say we need to maybe make it a more solution-focused conversation, yeah?
Yeah, there's a movement in journalism called solutions journalism, which is kind of leading off with a solution rather than just restating the problem over and over again.
I like it, yeah.
You know, let's say the housing crisis here, instead of just reciting again, you focus on somebody who's doing something about it or pushing a solution. It's not that you kind of ignore the problem or minimize it. It's just not the first thing you put in.
And people will tend to engage more with that, will they?
Yeah. And sorry, just one more thing on that, Brendan, is that you know, when we hear about the fires and the floods, we've kind of a good idea of, you know, what we don't want. We're missing that. What are we moving towards?
A picture yeah. of what it looks like.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
We don't have that, do
what
we?
A sustainable Ireland would look like, a sustainable city, or even your sustainable house.
Whereas I have a picture in my head of climbing Armageddon very clearly, like.
Well, that's the result of 40 years of talking about the disaster of it rather than the solutions.
So, Camille, you'd be tempted to say that, like, climate needs a Catherine Connolly or a Zoran Mamdani type, like, who gets people to buy into a movement. Then you go, well, Greta is that, but it needs some. Does it need galvanising figures? Maybe.
It needs, like, there's definitely space for somebody like Mamdani or Catherine Connolly, who's going to talk about the climate justice side of things, the fairness side.
I mean, in their way of communicating, though, and getting people to buy into that this is about us and we own this movement.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely trusted messengers are huge.
Trusted messengers, okay.
But there's a big campaign out there to delegitimize people who come on to talk about this. Let's not, you know, this is not an uncontested space. So, like, Greta Thunberg was extremely triggering for certain types of people, and it's very hard to find. David Attenborough is probably the closest we've come to somebody who is accepted more or less universally, but even then, some on the climate side would say he doesn't mention climate enough. It's very difficult to find a communicator who can reach every audience. I think we need loads of little Gretas and little David Attenboroughs.
Okay. Is there a lot of jargon as well?
I was just thinking about, there's jargon about jargon. So they talk about climate change being full of TLAs, which is three-letter acronyms. It's an acronym for too many acronyms. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's if you start talking about it, even the word COP, it stands for Conferences of the Parties. And once you use it, then most people have tuned out because they don't know what COP means and why is it COP30 and what are the parties party to. So there's a lot of explaining to do, groundwork to do, even before you get to talk about what the issues are. So yeah, it's like an alphabet soup of different jargon.
Okay, and is there a move to put it all into accessible English somewhere in the whole space?
I've been doing a bit of work with different media organisations, including RTE, to have this kind of educational approach where you'd have explainers and fact boxes. And, you know, it's got to the stage where a lot of people kind of have this feeling, I should know about this, and I'm a bit embarrassed to say I don't know.
And they're talking about it as if I should know.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And we need to help them, I think, a little bit with that, with the climate literacy part of it.
Okay, that was 10 minutes of excellent insight there. Thank you very much, Dr. David Robbins from DCU. We'll take a break.